So now what remains is to cover these 16 exercises, you may call them, or 16 practices, which explains how to become an arahat, the one who has killed the defilements, on the base of meditation on the breath. And we have seen the peculiarity of this text is that it seems, but you should not interpret it literally, that one by mindfulness of the breath, in breath and out breath, which explain the process of counting according to the commentaries, one can become sotapanna, the one who has a direct experience of the object of liberation, which is not the object as such, we have explained. And one uses these 16 exercises to complete the path of meditation. We have explained the path of seeing means direct seeing of the object of liberation. Path of meditation means going higher to the second fruit. They are called the Shramana Phala, or Samana Phala, the fruits of the practice, of the ascetic practices leading to Nirvana. First is entrance into the stream leading to Nirvana. Second is the deeper removal of grasping and rejection, which are the main causes of all the other defilements. And the third one, when one attains the third one, one is not born anymore in the sphere of the senses, of the dominated by the five senses. One can only be born in the highest sphere. He does not come back into the world, or he attains Nirvana while in the highest sphere. And the highest sphere is the sphere of the anagamis. This is a special place. And then arahat, all these fruits of the shramana, fruits of the recluses, can be obtained by the mindful observation of the breath. In a way, mindful observation of the breath are also the following steps that we have described. The mindful observation of the breath means literally counting, but we do not need necessarily to explain counting in a literal way. It means just the mindful breathing in and breathing out. When we mindfully breathe in and out, we can go to all these higher stages. So then it makes sense. Otherwise, by counting the breath, it is difficult to become, have the direct realization. And now we are at these 16 exercises. All this is related to the analysis of the Anapanasati Sutta. You can read, it is basically the same in Northern tradition as in Southern tradition. where it is clearly explained, no matter where you are on your path, whether you are still Putujana, or you are Sotapanna, or you are an Arahat, or even the Buddha himself, we have mentioned, the practice of Anapana is most beneficial because it brings you to the direct knowledge of what is the world, because the world is based on mind and body, and what is beyond the world. The world beyond the world, you go through the knowledge of the mind and the body. You don't need to go anywhere else. So these 16 exercises, let us read the text. We don't need actually to enumerate these 16 exercises because they are explained. So let us go direct to the explanation. Or we can read them, so otherwise it may be confusing. And then explain them. Because they are slightly different in the Theravada and slightly different here. So it says, when one who is thoroughly trained in the four realities has eradicated the attributes that are to be dispelled by the path of seeing, the four realities, let me see the Chinese translation, but must be the four noble truths, no? He translates the four noble truths as the four realities. Has eradicated the attributes that are to be dispelled by the path of seeing. He's using sometimes a very non-conventional, it is very good the translation, but very non-conventional. Okay, and as in order to eradicate them, one thoroughly trains by way of the 16 aspects. He translates aspects, actually it means 16 superior practices in Chinese. So it is interesting. 16 aspects or 16 superior practices, whatever one likes. What are the 16 aspects? What are the 16 practices simply? One practice is mindfully inhaling, mindfully noting the breath being inhaled. Okay? One practice is mindfully exhaling, mindfully noting the breath being exhaled. This explains, as we have explained, the step of counting, no? Ganana. Inhaling, this is the first exercise which he connects. They are not connected like this in Pali, but it doesn't matter. Inhaling, one authentically experiences, that is his translation, but actually Patisamvedi means simply experiences. He translates authentically experiences, okay, but experiences is enough. Patisamvena, of course, has the meaning of direct experience, directly feeling. He always uses is authentically experiencing, so don't be confused, it just means directly feeling. Long and short breaths. It would be rather long or short breaths. Then he, because you cannot experience long and short breaths. You can, if you watch the gross breath as long and the short breath being the in between breaths. But this is not normal what you will find in other scriptures. So then the entire body and also feeling the entire body, one practice is noting breath being inhaled. The entire body, we have explained, actually according to the Pali commentaries, entire body means three bodies. The body of the breath, be it the gross breath and the subtle breath, the body of the mind, which is looking at the breath, because the mind is also the body. In Pali or Sanskrit, kaya, the body, means similar meaning like aggregate. It means many things together. It's not just one body here, but many, many bodies coming together. So whenever there is a form, it is also the body consisting of the element of earth, water, fire, wind. They are together. There must be also some color. There will be also some smell or some taste. All this is included in the form. And the body of the breath, breath is also the body because it consists of wind, but wind cannot be separated from earth, fire and water, so it's also the body. And the body literally, the whole body. So actually experiencing one body means experiencing the three bodies as one. And that we have explains according to Paoksayado and according to commentaries, this explains the process of placing the mind after following long or short breath, placing the mind on the nimitta of the breath. Then when you place the mind on the nimitta of the breath, then it becomes more and more subtle until it is completely sublimated in the fourth dhyana. Exhaling, one authentically experience, it is the same thing, only this end in a Chinese would rather be be it this or that, and this is also same in Pali. Then comes the fourth exercise, Pasambayam, inhaling, upon really refining the bodily formations, that means making the bodily formations, which is a breath. We have learned in the beginning, breath has three names: in-breath, out-breath, anapana, bodily formations, and wind element. Wind element is the name which is the common name. The others are the special name explained before. So the bodily formations mean just breath. Refining means sublimating the bodily formation, making them more and more subtle. One practice is noting the inhalation, upon really refining the bodily formation. Exhaling, really refining the bodily formation. One practice is noting, refining the bodily formations. It is explained further. Now, this explains especially the practice of shamatha we have. But as Visuddhimagga explained, when you meditate on the body in the kaya anupasana, there is also shamatha and there is also vipassana. Both shamatha and vipassana, what he calls, refine the breath. When you have wisdom and when you have especially concentration, both refine the breath. It is not just only the concentration refine the breath, but both concentration and wisdom refine the breath. This is what Visuddhimagga also said. So you cannot really separate. Now you have got the jhanas. So according to Visuddhimagga, also according to here, only when, strictly speaking, only when you have the jhanas, you can practice this Vedana Anupassana as it is described here. Why? Very simple reason. What do you think? Try to be joyful for an hour or even for 10 minutes. You will be in great trouble. Impossible. Then this joy will become a tragedy of a joy rather than joy. Because when the mind is not stable, you cannot be stay in one sensation for a long time. This is the advantage of the jhana. Jhana is what makes the mind strong. How does the mind become strong? Mind becomes strong because it stays with the same sensation. So you have some teachers, especially in Sri Lanka, in Europe, there was one very famous nun called Khema, Sister Khema, you may have heard of her. She was teaching this jhanas on the base of observation of the breath, of the feeling. Through maintaining the same feeling, you can also go into jhana. But this jhana you cannot use for, strictly speaking, for the detailed you have two kinds of vipassana, the kalapa vipassana, anupada vipassana. Kalapa vipassana means you just analyze in groups, aggregate of form, aggregate of feeling. You don't need to analyze in detail. Then anupada vipassana means you analyze in detail. The Venerable Sariputta was the expert in this vipassana, anupada vipassana. So he was the general of the Dharma. He could explain exactly the characteristics of all the mental formations and of all the rupas also. This can only be done by anupada vipassana. And the Abhidharma descriptions of the mind and of the form are based on this anupada vipassana. So you can only stay in joy for a long time in the state of jhana. Which jhana? The first and the second jhana. Then you don't change the feeling. You stay in the same feeling for an hour, 2 hours, if you become an expert, even for the whole day. According to Visuddhimagga, for up to 7 days. Venerable Revata, he can stay for 7 days in the same sensation. Then how powerful the mind becomes. In Jhana Samyutta, Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha compares the practice of the jhana to swimming across. In order to swim from this shore of the Ganges to the other shore, especially if you are in UP or in Bihar or in Bengal, in Bengal you almost can't see on the other side. So why, if you want to get to the other shore, you have to be an expert swimmer. Otherwise you will, while swimming, you will get drawn. You will sink. The Buddha compares the swimming to jhana. If you want to get to the other shore, you have to be an expert swimmer, otherwise you may sink in the middle. And he compares his practice of the jhanas to swimming. That's why in the Abhidhamma, the right samadhi, which is the last of the Eightfold Noble Paths, is explained as the eight samapatis, the eight practice of the eight jhanas. But of course you will find this Susima Sutta, which explained that even without the jhanas and without the liberations you can become an arahat. But this is only one place. So in the first and second dhyana one can stay in the for a long time in the state of joy. The sensation does not change. Then if you use this not this method of kema, of getting into jhana, so dwelling on the same sensation, if you use the method as described in the Visuddhimagga, where you work with nimitta, you progress to stabilizing the nimitta, then you can see the same nimitta at the base of your mind. I have explained today to some who are deeply engaged in this practice. And when you see it, you will see the stream of consciousness going to that nimitta you have cultivated. When you see that nimitta at the base of your consciousness, and you are sure you have attained the jhana, because your feeling, when the feeling does not change, the mind does not change, because the mind is controlled in the world, in the samsara, by feeling. When the feeling does not change, the mind does not change. When the sensation does not change, mind does not change. But the sensation is always changing, unless you are in jhana. In jhana the sensation does not change, so you can see the object of the jhana. When you see the object of the jhana, you will be able to discover the mind which goes to that object. That will be of course immediately preceding mind, because of the principle described in the scriptures. Just like knife cannot cut itself, finger cannot point at itself, the mind cannot see itself, it can only see the immediately preceding mind. Now, if you have the jhana, you can see it with the object, which is a jhana object. And you will see that this joy is appearing and disappearing moment by moment. So you know this joy is just impermanence. Impermanence cannot bring a lasting satisfaction. So ultimately this joy is also dukkha. So you can detach. According to the scriptures, nowadays may not be necessarily the case, but according to the scriptures, because of this detachment from the jhana, the Buddhists are able to practice much deeper the samadhi than other schools of yoga, because of this complete detachment from it. But it may not be necessarily the case. It probably was at the time of Buddha. So this is how you join the shamatha and vipassana into one. You get into jhana and you observe the that which makes the jhana continuous, the same sensation and the same object, you observe appearing and disappearing moment by moment. So you get a subtle sensation and you get disenchanted from subtle sensation. So this is the best way, because sensation is what binds us to samsara. This is the best meditation to experience sensation and go beyond sensation. What is the state of arahat? Experiencing sensation and go beyond sensation. Experiencing joy without grasping at joy. Experiencing happiness without grasping at happiness. Experiencing the unpleasant sensation without grasping at unpleasant sensation. So he has no daumanasyam, he has no anger. No more anger. So he practices the Dhamma Kanti, the acceptance of the Dharma, endurance of the Dharma. And this is the highest practice, no self. So similarly, like in first dhyana, second dhyana, there you have also, so in the third dhyana, in the first and second dhyana, you have also sukha. But it will not be so prominent. In the third dhyana, when there is no more joy, then it becomes very prominent. But you can practice also the contemplation of the sukha as being impermanent in first dhyana, second dhyana, and the third dhyana. It is the ultimate sukha, the highest sukha one can get into in the world. Sukha in the sense of being connected with light and tendency of grabbing. Because its latent tendency is very, very deep. So even in jhana there may be still this latent tendency of enjoying is in a way grabbing. Buddha says one who enjoys, he is grabbing, he is holding. But in the fourth dhyana you cannot enjoy already. That's why you have sukha, but it is not sukha from the sensation of sukha. It is the highest sukha from upeksha. However you explain it, it may not make sense, but it is so. One has to experience. And that is the most peaceful sukha. The most peaceful sukha is the sukha from upeksha, from equanimity, purified equanimity. So in Abhidharma, the sukha of the fourth dhyana is explained apart from the usually sukha. So we come higher, authentically experiencing joy, authentically experiencing well-being, authentically experiencing the formations of the mind, and really refining the formations of the mind. One practices noticing inhalation, and that we will explain later. Now just to see the name, this is all same, like in Pali, no difference. Then authentically experiencing joy, authentically experiencing well-being, and then it is the same. One practice is noting exhalation. The text is the same, but explanation is different. That's what makes it so interesting. You will find when you practice, when you study Visuddhimagga, the same exercises, but the explanation is different. That makes what makes the study of Buddhism so interesting. So, only shows that Buddhism should not be a dogma. You can see the same thing with different aspects. All makes sense. Now we come to the third base of mindfulness, the anupassana of the mind, authentically experiencing mind, bringing exceptional joy to the mind, well, just gladdening the mind, that's concentrating the mind and liberating the mind. One practice is noting the mind's that is more or less the same. Authentically experiencing mind, bringing exceptional joy, that is same inhalation, exhalation. We will explain that. Then beholding impermanence, beholding the eradication of obscuration. That is actually eradication of obscuration means simply prahana, the abandoning of obscuration, abandoning of what obscuration. This is the explains we will learn. This explains, the prahana explains in the scripture becoming a sotapanna. The detachment explains the higher stages, and cessation explains the state of an arahat. This is a peculiarity of the scripture. You will find more or less the same explanation, more or less the same idea, but explained completely differently in the Theravada tradition. That also makes it so interesting. So now we come to the explanation. Now I will have to see the translation, because there are some differences here. The text is quite similar, but the explanation sometimes tend to be quite different. Okay, so here it starts. Question. which he does not say here, but it is a question. A question: what is the classification of these 16 points? Or what are the different aspects of these 16 practices, says Chinese. If one observes the four practices, one achieves the four applications of mindfulness. What four practices? We have explained them. They are the counting, the aggregates, the dependent origination, and the noble truths, which he calls the realities. In Chinese, it is more obvious. It says, when he has learned the direct seeing, he has attained the four bases of mindfulness. You cannot attain the state of sotapanna without having attained the four foundations of mindfulness. This makes, I think, a better sense. In order to eradicate the remaining fetters, we have explained what fetters one eradicate when one becomes a sotapanna. So still remains the other fetters, the other samyojanas, bondages. One begins to focus the attention on the object of inhalation and exhalation. Thus it is said, one practices mindfully inhaling, mindfully noting inhalation. It's more or less the same, but he uses rather unconventional words. When focusing on the inhalation or exhalation, if a long inhalation occurs, one practices noting that a long breath is inhaled. If a long exhalation occurs, one practices, actually in Chinese, one learns practicing noting that a long breath is exhaled. So here you have already learning. In Pali you don't have learning, here also don't have learning, but in Chinese I think there is learning. And it is quite significant. You learn in every step. Why? We have explained, according to the Chinese tradition, in each and every step, when you have understood the whole, you can attain the liberation. This makes sense to make you aware that this is an organic process. You cannot really strictly separate these different parts, except that you cannot breathe long and short breaths at the same time. If it is so, then it will be the long breath, gross breath, and the short breath, the in-between breath, or the opposite. It can become the opposite. If you pay attention to the in-between breath, it will become longer and the gross breath becomes shorter. And this is how you also can get into the deep state of concentration. So inhalation and exhalation are of long duration, while interim inhalation and exhalation are of short duration. This is, of course, in the beginning only. One observes and recognizes them in the manner in which they occur. When one is intently focused upon the entrance of inhalation and exhalation into the minute cavities of the pores of the body, one authentically experiences the entire body. Here it means, very simple, when you concentrate on this in-between breath, then the inhalation and exhalation will also be experienced eventually in the whole body. So here it becomes not so clear, but you will feel very clearly the whole body breathing in and breathing out. Some of you may have made this experience. It becomes very clear. So then you literally breathing through the whole body. This is how this meditation is mostly taught in China. And it is connected with the Zen also. When the inhalation and interim inhalation have ceased, this is difficult to understand, but in order that even the interim inhalation and exhalation cease, that is incredible depth of concentration. In our case, it will not happen, so don't worry. So they will disappear, the in-breath and out-breath at the nostrils, but this will still remain, and the body still will be felt. When you become like the teachers of the Buddha, then maybe it will disappear completely. Then you can be there, and 500 bullock carts pass by your feet, you will not hear anything. But it will take some time before we get there. When the inhalation and interim inhalation have ceased, there is an absence of inhalation and exhalation, and one is focused on the circumstance of the absence of inhalation and exhalation. When the exhalation and interim exhalation have ceased, and when inhalation and interim inhalation have not occurred, there is an absence of exhalation and inhalation, that is clear. When one is focused on the various circumstances of their cessation due to their absence, if a breath is inhaled upon really refining the bodily formation, one practices noting the inhalation upon really refining the bodily formation. That means one is witnessing how this breath is becoming more and more subtle until it disappears completely. If a breath is exhaled upon really refining the bodily formation, one practices noting the exhalation upon really refining the bodily formation. This is this fourth stage we have explained. First stage, counting. Second stage, following. Third stage, experiencing whole body. If it is shamatha, then placing the mind on the nimitta. Then refining until the breath disappears. It is the same only here. It disappears by making the gross breath less and less noticeable, and the subtle breath more and more noticeable, so you breathe through the whole body, and finally it will also disappear. So we are to believe, but I don't know. Moreover, result of devotion to this practice. In order to succeed in the practice, one has to practice satatam sakrityam. This is always emphasized in the by Asanga. What is satatam sakrityam? Always, that means continuously and with devotion. With great respect for the practice. There occurs rough inhalations and exhalations whose contact is painful for one who is not thoroughly trained. This is very interesting. Huh? You may experience that when you get into these subtle states and you are not yet familiar with them. So suddenly the heart may start beating very fast. Huh? The breath becomes very uncomfortable. Hmm? This is a stage you have to go through to get deep into the jhana. Hmm? On the other hand, for those who are thoroughly trained, there occur gentle breaths whose contact is pleasant. Hmm? When you do not get frightened by these experiences. Always getting deeper into meditation is getting into obstacles. There is no exception. In the practice of shamatha, these obstacles are not so terrific and one can learn by himself. But in the vipassana, this breakthrough can be terrific obstacles. So it is, that's why in order to succeed in shamatha you not necessarily need a teacher, but in order to succeed in vipassana you definitely need a teacher, because then when you are close, these terrible doubts and terrible obstacles may appear before you make the breakthrough and you see clearly what's beyond all this. Hmm? So when you don't try hard, the Mara will not be worried. When you try hard, then he is sure to come, as all the scriptures emphasize, hmm? And try to dissuade you from making the breakthrough, hmm? Especially in the stage of Sotapanna and in the stage of an Arahat. That's why when the Buddha was under the Bodhi tree, the whole earth was shaking with obstacles, because he had such a powerful mind. So these are the obstacles, both in shamatha and both in vipassana. If one practices hard, there's no way to avoid them. But what we learn through facing obstacles with wisdom. That is why this suffering starts with ignorance and ends with wisdom. No? Thus it is said that when one exhales upon really refining the bodily formation, one practices noting that one exhales upon really refining the bodily formation. So we have covered this kaya gata sati, the mindfulness gone into the body. It has also the part of the shamatha, it has also the part of the vipassana, but the part of the shamatha is dominating. By mastering the body sensations, we get higher and higher into the finer spheres of the samsara and beyond. Buddha explains the process of liberation, among others, of experiencing the finer and finer sensations until going beyond sensation. Now we come into the Vedana Anupassana, the observation, mindfulness of the feelings, of the sensations. And from this text, according to this text, we can see that actually we cannot go into real depths in Vedana Anupasana if we don't have the jhanas. This comes clear from this text. But still, by practicing the Vedana Anupasana, like in Goenka system and so on, you can get a very good insight, but very difficult to get a breakthrough. You will hardly find anyone who has got a breakthrough through the system. Just observing the Vedana and detaching from the Vedana. Thus, if one diligently practices mindfulness of the inhalation and exhalation, attain the first and second dhyana, at that time, inhaling while authentically experiencing joy, one practices noting the inhalation while authentically experiencing the joy. No need for authentically, just experiencing the joy will do. If one authentically experiences joy while exhaling, one practices noting that one authentically experiences joy while exhaling. If one attains the third dhyana, but actually there is also sukha in the first and the second dhyana, so you can practice the same in the theoretically in the first and the second, but this, according to Abhidharma, you have the division of sukha, sapitika sukha and nipitika sukha. Sapitika sutta is the first and the second jhana. Nipitika sutta, without the joy, is the third dhyana and of course the fourth dhyana. And this the joy, the happiness without the joy is much more subtle than the happiness with joy. And the joy is explained differently in the northern tradition and in the southern tradition. In the southern tradition, the joy belongs to the Sankhara Khanda. In northern tradition, the joy is the pleasant mental feeling, saumanasyam, very interesting. And sukha is also explained differently. Sukha in the southern tradition is explained as prashrabdi, relaxation and clarity. This is the supreme happiness. So it is very interesting. If one attains the third dhyana, which is devoid of joy at the time, inhaling, authentically experiencing well-being, one practices noting the inhalation while authentically experiences well-being. If one authentically experiences well-being while exhaling, one practices noting that one authentically experiences well-being while exhaling. So, you can see that Buddhism should not be taken as a dogma. We should practice ourselves. When you drink the water, you know what it tastes. So, don't believe too much in these definitions. Practice by yourself. Dharma is ehi pasiko, come and see. Beyond the third dhyana, there is no practice of mindfulness of breathing. Of course, the breath is not there. Such state are declared and identified as being beyond the third dhyana. That means must be I don't see the Chinese text, but must be it is simple, the state of no breath is beyond the third dhyana. Now we come to the third and fourth exercise in the Vedana Anupassana. The definition is the same, but explanation is very different. That's what makes it so interesting to study Buddhism. And you can very, very clearly see Buddhism is not a religion, but a wisdom. No? You can explain the same experience in a different way. Now, if while authentically experiencing joy or well-being due to lapse of mindfulness, there arise such thoughts, such vikalpas, as I exist, this is myself, in Chinese is a little different. In Chinese is there is the self and there is what belongs to the self. Maybe it is better a little bit. This is myself, in Chinese is there arises wo man, very interesting word. Wo man means manyana, very interesting term in Buddhism, manyana, impossible to translate. From manyana is mana, but mana is translated as pride or self-pride. But it has a much deeper meaning. When we say pride, you seem to be smarter, right? But in Buddhism, whatever you think, manyana means believing that there is such a thing as a self. That is, you believe you are superior, you believe you are inferior, you believe you are anything, that is manyana. So if there is this manyana of the self, so you ask yourself, in here it is translated, I will exist, but in Chinese maybe it is a better translation, we don't have the Sanskrit, should I think that I exist or should I think that I do not exist? Should I think that I have, or is it so that I have a form, or is it so that I have no form? Is it so that I have sanya? He translates as discernment here. I have, discernment is all right, but sanya can also mean memory. Or I have not discernment, or I have neither have nor non have discernment, being the self. No, when you go the highest in the samadhi, you have so subtle discernment that it cannot be called real discernment anymore. And you can, at that state, if you are still a putujana, you can still think, is this real myself? Is this what it is the ultimate reality about? All this is, of course, prapancha. Then the volitional discerning factor has been agitated by confusion. So by this vikalpa, by this unnecessary vikalpas, unnecessary differentiating thinking, unnecessary vikalpa, we can translate best as mental fabrications. The mind becomes agitated in these higher states of concentration. The Chinese translation is a little different. I have noted here. Manifests are formed together with arising of craving. In Chinese, with the prapancha. In Chinese, they translate prapancha as shilun, very interesting translation. Shil means joyful, lun means self-discussion, huh? Joyful self-discussion. And producing is abhisamskaroti. That means, producing is all right. It also has a meaning of fabricating. Producing a craving. Actually, in Chinese, it means the thirst, the tanha and upadana, thirst and clinging. Immediately upon their arising, one ascertains them with intelligence, and not dwelling in them, one abandons them, dispels them, and removes them. Then one authentically experiences the fifth anupassana, mental formation and inhaling. Upon really refining mental formations, one practicing, noting the inhalation upon refining mental formations. Then one authentically experiencing mental formations and exhaling upon really refining mental formation, one practices. So first you So in a piti pati samvedyasya samyati sikhati, piti pati samvedipasya samyati sikhati, sukham pati samvedipasya samyati sikhati. So you are learning to sukram anupati samvipassanam sukram pasambhayam citta sangram saranam sukram pasambhayam citta sangram. You learning to experience the citta sankharas, which means the perceptions and the sensations, and then you refine or sublimate perceptions and sensations. Here, especially talking about sensations. So. How do you perceive the different sensations, different the mental formations according to Abhidhamma? You go to the different stages. You go to the stage before jhana, you go to first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and so you are experiencing the different mental formations, because the sensations and perceptions, especially sensations in these different levels of consciousness, are different. Then you refine them by going higher and higher. The sensation is gross in the sense sphere, it becomes more fine in the upachara samadhi, it becomes more fine in the first jhana, in the second jhana, in the third jhana, in the fourth jhana. The same text actually, but the explanation so different. And here you observe the mental formation, it means you observe your prapancha ideas coming, am I this, am I that, is it myself, is it not myself, and then you sublimate it, you don't think that anymore. So that is how you stop thinking this nonsense of prapancha. So first you experience these mental formations, then you refine them, these mental formations. While experiencing them, you refine them. Experience a mental formation means here experiencing these fabrications, and you refine them, you don't think anymore. So both explanations, excellent explanation, and they both make a perfect sense, right? You can understand in this way, you can understand in another way. Both make sense. You experience the mental formations, then you refine them. The mental formations are these different sensations in the jhanas, and the mental formations are also these fanciful fabrications that you make. Because the mental formation also means perception, not only sensation. So here is more emphasized the aspect of perception. The Visuddhimagga emphasizes the aspect of sensation. Both are okay.
When you say sensation, do you mean Vedana?
Yes, Vedana, of course. Vedana. These we have explained, the bodily formations are the breath, and the mental formations is Vedana and Sanya. They determine the content of the mind. All the others, they are dependent on them. Especially the sensation. All the other mental formations meet at the place of touch. And the place of touch is experiencing the object, receiving the object. That is sensation. And how we receive the object is determined by the sensation, by the perception. And the perception also implies the memory. In Buddhism, the memory is not the independent mental factor, that is very interesting, but it belongs to the perception. Based on this, you will get a very interesting theories like Sautrantika. What we actually see is not the object, but we see the memory of the object, no? So you see, Buddhism is a wisdom we can explain in a different way. All makes sense. It is not a dogma. So it is very useful to see the different aspects and compare them.
Can I ask a quick question? I'm just curious. So you were a teaching assistant to Pao Sayadaw for a while then? And then, was it something? How come you left that tradition specifically to come here? Was it the teaching method, or was it the ideology?
I don't understand your question.
Because you were studying with Pawak Sayadaw, right, for a while, and you gave up that tradition to come.
I did not give up that tradition, not at all. Who told you that?
It is
a very good tradition. I have no objection at all, but it is not a dogma. That's all.
Because their way is, this is the way, right?
They should not, but they have this tendency. No? The Pawak Sayadaw himself, not so much, but the students, students, they often do that. Huh?
That
is a problem in Burma. They always have conflicting views, no? And this should not happen.
Gotcha.
In Burma, they are always these opposing schools, huh? And one tends to put the other down. Huh? And this is very bad for Buddhism in a way.
It's just mainly in that area?
Hmm?
Just mainly in Burma, it's like that?
Yeah, Burma, this Theravada meditation is best preserved in Burma, and also scholarship. What to do? Burma is the Mecca of Buddhism. Of Theravada Buddhism, of course. We have already surpassed our time by far, no? What was it? When was it supposed to end? From 5:30 to 6, not for, to 7:15. Now it's already 7:45. So let us do tomorrow, so we have something more. There is not so much left now. That Dhamma Anupassana is especially interesting, so we will explain that tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.